session number 16266, reel 3.
Tommy Broome, reel 3.
This was on the Monday morning, and we were due to set course for the Pyrenees the next day on the Tuesday. So on the Tuesday afternoon, Johnson again came for me, and there was four of us going. One went up independently from Chandelieu's, and we walked out about 2 hours to a place called Yerang, which is about 2 miles in from the coast. We passed over the railway bridge at Seaburg at a German sentry, wished him good afternoon, and away. And we got there, and met the others had gone up separately. Now, there's a little story in a minute, because one of them was taken up by a young girl on a bicycle. And there we met our guide, which was Florentino, our Basque guide, a great big chap. He spoke only Basque, and he saw we were kitted out. We had Basque beret now, and espadrilles for the mountains and the stick. We had a meal, and about 8 o'clock we set off. It was dark, and there was no moon, and now that suited us. And we went up with Florentine in the front, us four evaders, and Johnson at the rear, checking all was well. No talking, because there were German patrols there. We eventually reached up the top, the side, where we could look down and see the river Pitasoa, I think it is, flows into the Atlantic, and see the Spanish side there on upon the top. And you can see the lighthouse going around. Well, we sat and waited there. Florentino had a swig of brandy, and we all had a swig, because he had a bottle hidden there. And then he used to wait for a bird call, and he got his bird call, and away we went, down again, right down. So we came to the river. Now he checked up and down the river bank. You could see a frontier post all lit up there. We knew what we had to do. The river, it was fordable there, and the other side was a grassy bank about 20 yards, then a road, then a row, and then you went up into the mountains again. Florentino eventually get the all clear. He went first, then we followed, all catching all hands, and water was up to our waist. And Johnson at the rear. We all crossed safely, waited a bit on the other bank. Then Florentino led his way across. We went across, just got up to the edge of the mountain where there's bushes and that you climb us up. Suddenly a voice called halt. We were ambushed. We knew that what to do was to run back to the riverside and see if any others were there. And so I ran back. And as I ran back, I caught my leg in the barbed wire and had a deep gash, and that was the only injury I suffered during the war. When I got back, I found Florentino there. No sign then the other three. So we waited about 10 minutes, or five or ten minutes, and Florentino and myself went again. Same thing happened, ambush. So we ran back the river, crossed back into France. We went a mile up, and then we crossed again and had no trouble up into the mountains. And eventually, around about 4 o'clock in the morning, began green fields. We went to a farmhouse, which was a safe house as far as Florentine. He slung some pebble up to a window. Farmer's wife came down, and we had a hot drink. And then we were shown to a barn. There was cattle on the floor, hay on the first floor of that 5 foot high. We were put up there and went to sleep. Woke up about 10 o'clock with potato soup. We had two helpings. Then presently the farmer came up and said something at Florentino. Went down again, and Florentino about 5 minutes at me, and we went to the window and looked out, and there's two Spanish police there. They were armed, and they were drinking a glass of wine, because of course that they captured some of the others, and stood up all night to search on the frontier. Anyway, the police went, he came up and got the all clear. Florentino, I didn't know, but he pointed at what he said, I'll be back about 7. And I left there, and when I looked over the side, they found near rats playing. They looked at me and I, but they didn't bother me. Eventually, about 7, Tarantino came back, walked down to the road, and there was a car waiting to take us into San Sebastian, the consulate. Now we were safe. And the Ministry of Chachi came up the next day, took us down to Madrid. We stopped the roadhouse on the way, and it caused a dramatic, of course, into the embassy there. We couldn't go out. Eventually, they found clearance for us, and I was now, not Air Force now, I was now Sergeant Major Cook of the Army. And had to go in front of the Spanish HQ, four of us did. Just signed a few papers, got the all clear. Back, and the next day, sent to the Madrid station. Locked in the carriage of us. We were given coffee and sandwiches, armed escort, down to La Linea. Now at La Linea, we just had to go in the frontier post there, say who we were. They let us out. We walked across No Man's Land to Gibraltar. A great moment. A month, all but a day, since I was missing. Stayed at Gibraltar a little time, given some spending money, kitted out. And then one came back on the first transport available, because the Boeing came a week later. And I came back on the battleship HMS Belair, landed at Gurrock, Scotland, and 3 days later, I think. And we're back in England. And 3 weeks leave, parents glad to see you, but now they'd formed a mosquito training unit, but it couldn't still be on the same station at Warren with 105 and 139, and I was post of that commission and became chief ground instructor.
So the Spaniards had placed no obstacle in your way?
Well, those people, those two that captured, when we got to San Sebastian, we told them their names. Now the Spaniards, they would be in no hurry to admit they're in custody, and they'd be in a frontier prison for about a week discussing in prison, and then they'd be moved down to the concentration camp at Miranda, El Ebro, and then they'd be released from there. But it was not a very, I know people that have been there, not a very nice, they keep in that frontier prison a week discussing place.
How soon did you get back to operations in Britain?
Ah, well, now I didn't have done any more. Now you're talking about, where are you talking about? September, October 1942. And now we were training. Wing Commander Rawson was the CO, he'd come off 105. I'm the chief ground instructor. And we were training crews for a level operation of 105 and then 39. And this went on until they were going to form a two group into the tactical air force for when D-Day was coming. And so in I think it was May or March or May 1943, we moved down to Finnmare because we weren't needed anymore to train them for the they were training attack. We were still going to train a few at Bicester, and eventually all those squadrons were put in the tactical air force. 105 were taken into 8 Pathfinder Group that had been born in 42. Now Air Marshal Bennett decided he'd like the Mosquito, our training unit, to train them for the oboe and the light night striking force. So back we go to RAF Moran and then to War Boys, and we train the crews for oboe and the light night striking force. Ira Broom has since joined us. You've no doubt got his story down. And he wanted to go back on operations. I wanted to go back on operations. But before this, Costello Bowen, he was instructing. And Group Captain Picard, they were changing the Mosquitoes. And he brought a Ventura over and to when he went to have some duel on our Mosquitoes. And one of our staff pilots had flown the on his squadron Ventura, and he asked if he could take it up. He said yes. He said, Costello Bowen, would you like to come and have a little flip round this Ventura? They took off, and 5 minutes later they crashed. Costello Bowen is a passenger. Sad, very sad. That was in August 43. And Ivor Broom, when he was training there when we were at Marham, a pupil crashed with him, and you've no doubt got it. Ivor broke his back, and he was off for some time. But anyway, in April 44, Ivor and I decided we want to go back. And the commander said, well, Ivor, you've done enough, and Tommy, you needn't go back. But we wanted to. And in the May, we went down to see Hamish and Hattie at group. Ivor and I had never flown together. And Hamish said, which squadron do you want to go to? We said 571, because Ivor had a word with Wing Commander Birkin before. And I said to Hamish, well, look, we've never flown together. We'll do a few training trips around England. Hamish said, you fly east, young man, and get your training in over Germany. So I hadn't flown much at all during this time. And Ivor and myself took a mosquito up, and we did some, I think, 20 minutes low-level bombing and 40 minutes SBA practice. And the next thing, the next time we flew together, was on operations on Pipes and Munskutten.
How did 571 Squadron compare with 105?
Well, now you're talking about 105, we did low-level daylights and high-level daylights. Now we're on a night flying in support, in the 8th Pathfinder group, in support of the main force.
Do you remember your first operation with them?
I think it's May 1944, Leverkusen, isn't it?
Well, it looks as though that your first operation was Ludwigshafen.
Ludwigshafen, yes, and then Leverkusen next one, something like that, isn't it?
Ludwigshafen, Hanover, then Leverkusen.
Leverkusen, yes. That was the
all
first
in May 1944.
Yes.
Do you remember those operations?
Oh, yes. They were entirely new to me. We'd never done them, because now you come on with the Pathfinder 11th airdropping and that. And we used to go in front, and sometimes in the mosquito light night striking force, and probably 20 or 30 we'd go and bomb a set. We did spoof raids for the go over the heavies along and turn off and bomb a target, and the heavies would shoot off somewhere else and drop fighter players in the hope that they would follow us instead of the heavies. And it weren't many times, especially over Berlin. I remember on this year's life program we had the Ivor Bruins, which was April of this year, 1995, and the Luftwaffe control of the night fires, as I was saying there on that program, that on one raid the mosquitoes were good with the heavies, came in over the Hamburg and Kiel gap, and they had to decide, the mosquitoes broke away window, and they had to decide whether to send the night fires to Berlin or take a chance, send them to keep them up there to see where the heavies was going. They sent them to Berlin, and all the heavies turned off to Setten, and they had fighters, so the mosquitoes drew them away, all right. It's too spoofy. And also fly in front of the wind heavies and wind of them, so they get a drop window, so they get a clear run. Now, on these trips, I think it's fairly, I think 1 month, we did 14 operations. Sometimes you do two nights at sessions, sometimes three. And there was one occasion, I think it's the 10th of August, the Dortmund-Ems Canal, low level. The 10th of August, that what they call gardening, which was mine land in the Dortmund-Ems Canal. Now, a few months before, 617, the Dambusters has had a go at it, and they lost 5 out of 8. It was a foggy night, and I think the pirate at B thought, well, perhaps the mosquitoes at low level could get away with it. And so they practiced up the Bedford Rivers, but Ivor and me didn't practice because we'd had experience at low level on Blenheims and mosquitoes. So that night we took off its at 11:30. Well, up past 1 in the morning, and we were due there at 3 o'clock. Now, 8 Group, Air Marshal Bennett, he, very good idea. We went and flew with a force of about, forget how many mosquitoes, to go to Osnabrück. And at At a certain stage when we're in an arsenal book, an oboe would drop a green target indicator, and that was a signal for the mine land force, I think there was nine of us, to turn off at 14,000 feet and on a certain course, which would take us to, when it was cloudy, but when we go up to the cloud, more oboes had dropped some red spot fires on the ground. We pick these up and do a time run, and you should hit the canal at 45 degrees to it, fly down and drop the mine. It went very satisfactorily. We came out of the cloud and we got the canal and dropped the mine, and I was down in the nose then, but as I ever looked up, there was a barge going by, and a bargee just poked his head out the back of the barge. He soon shut the door when he saw us coming down, and we did a climbing turn to the right, came back between Rotterdam and Amsterdam, and back about half past four in the morning. As we left, we saw another aircraft that were getting plenty of flak. We got an engine knocked out, but we didn't lose any, and we closed the canal for 6 weeks. Very satisfactory operation. That was in our own aircraft, MM118, and we also had the ground crew placed seeing the pilot of the broom and the navigator of the broom, placed cross broom sticks on the front of the aircraft, called them the flying broom. But that only took place because on the 16th of August we took it to Berlin at 27,000 feet, and we got coned in the searchlights. If you got coned early on, you were 20 minutes going in and out, and the flak up, they hit us. We dropped the bombs and turned around and come home, and when they got the aircraft back, it was badly damaged, what they call catastrophe, not repairable on the unit. So that was the end of our own aircraft then. Now, more mosquitoes were coming in, and Air Marshal Bennett, he managed to get all of a sudden, they formed new squadrons. An RAF Witten had just had runways laid down, and decided that they'd form a new 1-2-8 squadron there. And now Ivor's on his way up, flight lieutenant now, and I'm a flight lieutenant. And Ivor Broom is squadron leader, flight commander, and Wing Commander Barrow's formed the squadron. We arrived there, and the next day two mosquitoes come, and Ivor and me took off in KB-453 that evening to Berlin, and the other one he had to turn back because just the two aircraft that we took off, it only arrived back, we bombed Berlin, and that was 5 days before the squadron was officially formed. So you can see how they got a move on in those days. Now 128 squadron, I was flight commander, and we got plenty of crews. And now comes another operation, low-level special operation, which is the Ardennes offensive started, and the supply lines they wanted then blocked leading up to the Ardennes. So a series of railway tunnels were selected, right from Cologne right down round, and that was to be a New Year's Day raid at 8:30 on January 1st. Now I'm in the mess having a pint. We knew the operation might come along because we'd undercut the practice low level. I've just got my first pint at 8 o'clock, a tap on the shoulder, that's your lot tonight. We're taking off at 6:30 in the morning. Anyway, I had three more before I went to bed. And up at 3, the briefing, we took off at 6:30. Now, there was five of us from our squadron. We took off first, Ivor and me. The chap took off behind his engine cut, and he went in with a 4,000-pounder that blew up, and he was just behind us. Now, it was the first time 4,000-pound bombs had dropped at low level. Had an 11-second delay fuse on them instead of the fuse in the nose, and that was on the tail. Our trip went south. We had a tunnel near Kaiserland, and we flew there, and picked up the spot where the railway line went up, and we went down low level. I said, "Ivor, there you are, sir." He was a squadron leader now. and popped the bomb in the tunnel. We went back to have a look, and low level, we right back to the base. So that was 8 o'clock in the evening at the point, and we were back and had our debriefing, the coffee and rum and bacon egg breakfast, and we were back resuming the New Year celebrations and done that operation. Photographs showed, because we had a mirror there and pointing backwards, and the camera would take the photo, and it showed some fighters, but we lost those when the down the hills of the Ardennes.
And your tunnel was at Kaiserlautern?
South of Kaiserlautern. A 4,000 pound bomb tunnel which went in and went straight into the tunnel. I have a pretty good dead idea.
And
now then, in the January, more mosquitoes came along, and Marshal Bennett decided to form a new squadron, also went to be called 163 Squadron. So he sent the squadron leader Broom, and they went to group at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Marshal Bennett said, "You're forming the new squadron 163, and you'll operate tomorrow night." Ivor came back and said to me, "You're a squadron Vietnam officer. We're operating tomorrow night." 9 o'clock the next morning, we went up the hangar, Ivor and me. That was all there was there. No aeroplanes, nobody at all. Eventually, a few aeroplanes arrived and a few crews from other squadrons. And the ground crew came. They came from Wellsburn and Mountford, and they'd only been on Wellingtons before. They didn't know about mosquitoes, but we had some technical men from Borrowed Cup from the other side, and they soon got with it. But they were all good engineers, but they hadn't worked on this before. And unfortunately, we couldn't operate that night. He said we would because the weather was bad and all the mosquitoes were grounded. But we would have done. If we hadn't had any, we'd have borrowed one from 128, and him and I would have gone. So, you know, we're 4 o'clock one afternoon, and 9 o'clock next morning, I think we operated the next night. Ivor's now the wing commander, I'm the squadron leader, and we carry on then, and then we got near, we could do 50 operations on the light night striking force. When it got to 49, the senior air staff officer, air commodore voice, rang up Ivor and said, "How many more you got to do? You're near, you've got to go up at 50. And I said, "Well, one more, sir. We want to stay on." I think it was the April. We didn't want to leave then. The war's near the end. And he said, "Right, every time I ring it, tell me you've got one more to do." So we managed to take it up to 58. And that was the end of the war at Witten.
What do you think about the criticism that we get nowadays of the work of Bomber Command during the war?
Well, if you take it that from June 1940 until June 41, when Hitler invaded Russia, the army were fighting in the Middle East. That was only a sort of sideshow, but we had nothing in England. The Navy were keeping the seaways open and bringing over all the ammunition. The Merchant Navy did a good job, because without anything, all the ships would have been tied up and all the aerodromes grounded. And there was nothing. The army was in England. There was nothing, and Germany was bombing us in those London. I mean, I know it, because my mother's house was bombed and all the things blew out, and they were there every night. In fact, the civilians, sometimes worse, the RAF aerodromes were stuck right out in the wilds, and you didn't get much out there, but all the people, they were, and everybody working 7 days a week. Now, they might go on and talk about all these people who say you shouldn't have bombed Dresden and all that. If they'd have been with me, you see, Germany, they defeated in May, but in Holland, they didn't surrender to the VE Day. Now, they were still pushing up flying bombs and rockets then, after Dresden. And if those people writing the books now would have been me at RAF Witten one day in April, when the squadron leader navigation officer 128 came out of SH2 with a telegram, his face was ashen. "Are you all right?" He just handed me the telegram. His wife and infant son killed flying bomb. Now, this is in April. You ask him if we should have carried on bombing Germany. Ask the people living in them. I've asked them when they've been, a lot of them married, moving down here. They said, well, in the East End, the rockets came down without any warning, didn't they? It was still right up to the last days of the war. I've in many of the latter years, I'm invited to speak places. If you live in a small place like I do, if you talk to the provost or something, you go around the circuit, and practically every time they ask me, bravery, all you people are brave, I said, no, not us, because we grew up with it. We grew up with it all the time. I said, the bravest people from the Air Force point of view that I know are those that used to listen to the radio in the morning, and it was always first, Alia, the bomber command, bombed Berlin last night, bombing at 35, 40 aircraft in missing. Now then, they heard that, and they still volunteered, because all aircraft, and they still volunteered to go and fly. Somebody said to me once, queuing up to die. And they were the bravest people I ever knew.